Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free? TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. So I'm old enough to remember when The Lord of the Rings was in the theaters. In fact, I was in college at the time, and I remember going back every holiday to visit my family, and sometimes I'd bring some friends from school to stay over for a bit, and then getting together and taking a group of us, including my father, who I've mentioned on this podcast, is the reason why I'm so into J.R.R. Tolkien's writings. And we would go together and we would enjoy these movies. It was a magical moment. It was a situation that I don't think I'd ever dreamed was possible. Being able to see my favorite books in all of their glory and scale and such a well-directed, well-acted, well-cast, everything was so perfect. And it, in my mind, it is one of those perfect memories from my past and something I'm glad I got to enjoy with my friends and especially my family. But I also remember from that time some of the critiques. For as perfect and wonderful and magical as I thought that experience, I remember not only the critiques going into it and people talking about the casting problems and those kinds of things and being very skeptical of the whole ordeal, but also the critiques about the story from movie reviewers who clearly hadn't read the books. And one critique in particular, I thought, might have had a little bit of merit at when I first heard it, but then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, this is ridiculous. And that specific critique was that the entire movie, and this was when The Fellowship of the Ring came out, was just them running away from danger after danger after danger, constantly running away. That's the entire film. A group of people on a quest who, instead of confronting the danger and fighting back, just constantly run away. And then the more I thought about that, the more I thought, well, that's ridiculous. They're up against these amazingly terrible odds and hordes of goblins, a Balrog, ringwraiths, I mean, all of these things that are way, way overpowered compared to anything they can do, especially the group of hobbits when they're off on their own or just with Aragorn. Of course they're going to run away. That's the nature of this, is these individuals who are very limited in their capabilities, but rise to the occasion, and the beginning of the story is them surmounting this problem by avoiding it. And eventually, they fight back at the end, but they have to get to the end of the story. This was just the first movie out of three. And I thought that that was so ridiculous the more I thought about it. And yet, here we are in The Hobbit with a situation where they've been running away from the goblins. And yeah, they did fight back a little bit, but for the most part, they ran away. And now they're running away from wolves. And we're entering the scene where they climb the trees and they have to try not to be eaten by wolves. And again, they're running away. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you were that movie critic, I don't remember which one it was, you could probably say the same thing about The Hobbit. But of course, when you get to the end of The Hobbit, things are very different. But we're not there yet. So let's talk about dwarves with their wagging beards up in a tree, avoiding getting eaten from wolves, and Gandalf's magic fire. Here we go. "Up the trees, quick," cried Gandalf, and they ran to the trees at the edge of the glade, hunting for those that had branches fairly low or were slender enough to swarm up. So if you recall, they heard the wolves and they are now looking for a way to get away from them. And so they decide to climb trees, which makes sense because wolves can't climb trees. They're not cats. They're not squirrels. They don't have wings. They can't get up the trees. But we get this word here, slender enough to swarm up. And I was like, that's such an interesting verb to use, because as a verb, it means to move in or form a swarm like insects. But it also can be used to say to move somewhere in large numbers. So the large number of them were all trying to move in the same direction at the same time. That's what this is saying. So it makes sense to use that word. It just seems like a verb that seems a little bit odd. But then again, Professor Tolkien always knew what words to use. So I'm gonna lean on him for this one, because it does come up again. And in this situation, it continues. But the tone of the situation, remember, we were going back to that comedic tone, and then things got real dark in the last episode, and they realized they're in danger. But we're back to a situation where the narrator is interweaving these comedic moments, because the situation is dire, but they can't let it be too dire. It can't be too scary for this audience. Plus, there are just some comedic aspects of the situation. For example, this line, "You would have laughed from a safe distance if you had seen the dwarves sitting up in the trees with their beards dangling down, like old gentlemen gone cracked and playing at being boys." And that imagery is great because most of these dwarves are fairly old. They're fairly mature and they have these long beards. So from a distance, you would have thought these were very short old men who were climbing a tree and just having fun like kids climbing trees. Totally makes sense. But then we get other details as well that are similarly comedic. Filly and Killy were at the top of a large lark. Again, the mentioning of a very specific type of tree, which I think in Tolkien's mind paints a picture, but I don't know what a lark is unless I look it up. Like an enormous Christmas tree. Okay, now I understand the picture. They're climbing up what seems like a Christmas tree, which again, seems kind of funny. Dory, Nori, Ori, Owen, and Glowin were more comfortable in a huge pine, with regular branches sticking out at intervals like the spokes of a wheel. He's painting a picture for us. And if we're familiar with these types of trees, then we get a very clear picture. But even not, we still get Christmas tree or spokes of a wheel. We get imagery that makes sense. The others are just kind of going up these other trees and explain that Dwalin and Balin are up in a fir tree. There seems to be a variety of different trees here. Then we get this about Gandalf. Gandalf, who was a good deal taller than the others, like we needed to be reminded, but I guess in this situation, it makes sense because they have to climb trees and being taller is actually very useful in that situation, had found a tree into which they could not climb, a large pine standing at the very edge of the glade. He was quite hidden in its boughs, but you could see his eyes gleaming in the moon as he peeped out. That feels, at first, kind of sinister, like the reflection of eyes staring at you in the dark, that sort of thing. But I think it's not supposed to be sinister. In fact, his eyes are gleaming as the moon peeps out. The moon is a good thing. A moon is a reference to a Maiar. Gandalf is a Maiar. The gleaming in his eyes is either actually light generating from himself, or it seems like there's a gleam in his eyes because that could be symbolic of a specific look that he has because he is now focused and intent on dealing with the situation, or it's a reflection of the moon. In any of those contexts, it's a good thing. So we get this serious moment, and then we get, again, another comedic moment, because what about Bilbo? Well, he couldn't get into the tree, and he was trying to go from one trunk to the other like a rabbit that has lost its hole and has a dog after it. Well, he is somebody who has lost his hole, Bag End. Technically, he hasn't lost it, but he's away from it. And there is a dog after him. It's a wolf. "You've left the burglar behind again," said Nori to Dori, looking down. "I can't be always carrying burglars on my back," said Dori. "Down tunnels and up trees? What do you think I am? A porter?" Again, a comedic conversation and the use of a word that we don't use very much anymore. The word is porter. Now, what exactly is a porter? Well, it's a person employed to carry luggage or other loads, especially in a railroad station, airport, or hotel. So he's basically saying, this isn't my job. Why do I always have to be the one doing this? I'm not a porter. And then we get a shift in tone again. We get this comedic conversation, but then we again are reminded that this is a very serious situation. Thorin pipes up and he says, he'll be eaten if we don't do something. It's Thorin who speaks out at this moment. It's not Gandalf. It's Thorin who's looking after Bilbo in this moment, or at least considering that Bilbo needs help. And then it's Dori who sacrifices himself, or at least puts himself in harm's way, potentially sacrificing himself in order to help save Bilbo. Now, this isn't the first time that the dwarves have done something nice for Bilbo. They've been nice to him in the past. But remember, we're now off of the situation where they escaped the goblins and Bilbo snuck up on them. They were very impressed that he survived and that he could sneak up on them. And so their mood towards him, their feelings towards him have kind of shifted. So it makes sense that maybe Dori would go out of his way a little bit more. But at the same time, are you really going to leave a member of your party to get eaten by wolves? That doesn't seem like a good idea anyway. We get a reminder in the text about Dori being a decent fellow in spite of his grumbling. And I think that that's probably something that you could apply to most of the dwarves. That seems like a common personality. This feeling of like, well, I don't want to have to do it, but all right, I'll do it anyway. You know, they have to have this like tough exterior and they're kind of stubborn. But when push comes to shove, they do the right thing, or at least most of them do or try to. So Dori goes down the tree. He lets Bilbo climb up and stand on his shoulders or on his back in order to try to reach the branches above him. And this seems like it's working. But then we get this reminder about the dire situation they're in and how dire it actually is, because it is a lot worse than just a few wolf howls would have you assume. The wolves come trotting into the clearing, and then we're told this. All of a sudden, there were hundreds of eyes looking at them. Now, if you do the math and assume that every wolf has two eyes, or at least most of them do, and they haven't gotten poked out or something, then that's at least 50 wolves. Hundreds could imply numbers in the hundreds of wolves. Now, I'm not an expert about animal species, but in the videos I've seen about wolves in the wild and, like, you know, National Geographic type videos on television or on YouTube, usually a pack doesn't have hundreds of members. They tend to be a lot smaller than that, at least from my understanding. So something else is going on here, and the narrator is starting to clue us in about this. So of course, Bilbo scrambles up the tree and Dory scrambles up behind him, and we're told that this happens only just in time. And again, we're reminded about the plot tension and how much the narrator or Tolkien likes to put these things into the text. And who knows, maybe it's Bilbo being dramatic and saying, oh, they just barely got away from the wolves, because they snap at Dory's cloak, heavily implying that had they gotten a hold of the cloak, they could have pulled him back down. But they don't. They survive. And so we start to get explanations about what the wolves are like. They have blazing eyes and tongues hanging out. Tongues hanging out, I think, implies hunger. They're ready to eat the party. And blazing eyes, I think this one is more sinister than the description we got about Gandalf. This is evil intent in their eyes. And then the very next paragraph, we get the first use of the word warg. But even the wild wargs, for so the evil wolves over the edge of the wild were named, cannot climb trees. And we're reminded there that they are beyond the edge of the wild. Again, they are well into the land of faerie. Wolves, even in this part of the world, don't work like regular wolves. We're reminded again. And in contrast to the danger of the wolves below, the narrator explains a little bit more about their situation up in the trees. It's very dire down below. There's hungry wargs, evil wolves that are after them. But yet up in the trees, it was not very comfortable, but at least it was warm and not windy. Had it been cold and windy, it would have been much harder for them to stay up in the trees for a long time. But it was a relatively warm night. Seems odd, right? Like, that seems kind of like a coincidence. Why would it be a warm night tonight? In fact, they were just talking about how it was getting colder and the weather was changing and it was moving to nighttime. So you'd assume that it would be even colder still because of the lack of the sunlight. The shadows had gotten long. It was moving into evening. And yet, somehow, it was relatively warm. That's not going to be the first coincidence we find in this section of the book. So then the narrator explains to us a little bit more about what's going on with the wolves here. This idea that this was a meeting place for the wolves. Now, how they knew that, I'm not really sure. Maybe it was just implied. And more kept coming in. So what was originally at least 50 wolves kept growing in number. And not only this, but we get something that starts to explain to us how intelligent these evil wolves actually are. They left guards at the foot of the tree in which Dory and Bilbo were, and then went snuffling about till they had smelt out every tree that had anyone in it. Regular wolves wouldn't leave part of the pack to guard a tree. That seems like an intelligent thing to do. Now, maybe wolves that hunt certain types of animals that tend to have to be waited upon to come out of their hole or come down from a tree would have learned this behavior, but it seems like a sign of intelligence. And then we're filled in on the numbers. They guarded all of these different trees, and then we're told hundreds and hundreds, it seemed, when referring to the rest of the wolves. Now, it doesn't say specifically hundreds and hundreds. That would be very difficult to count in the situation as dire as this. It says it seemed. So again, maybe this is an exaggeration because Bilbo likes to exaggerate, but it could have been hundreds and hundreds. And the rest of them decide to sit and wait.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
And we're given an explanation about their social structure here. A great gray wolf. He spoke to them in the dreadful language of the wargs. There's a leader, a bigger one in the middle, commanding the others. And we're told that Gandalf understands this language. This isn't the first time that we're going to have a situation where Gandalf understands a language and that the rest of them don't. But it might be the first time. I don't think Gandalf reads anything in the Goblin Caves. I don't recall. It might be the first time that we learn that Gandalf understands evil languages also, which, although in some cases you might think means that that person has delved in evil things and has some connection to evil, but this is Gandalf. Really what this is telling us is that he is so wise that he has even studied the ways of the evil creatures of the world to understand them. It makes sense when you are at war with an enemy to understand the enemy's language so that you can have better information about them. And Bilbo doesn't, of course, and the language sounds cruel and wicked to him. But then we get this. Every now and then, all the wargs in the circle would answer their gray chief altogether, and their dreadful clamor almost made the hobbit fall out of his pine tree. To me, this feels very militaristic. It feels like ranks of soldiers with a commanding officer. The officer talks to the soldiers, and then after certain things that that officer says, all of the soldiers together chime in with the thing they're supposed to respond with, whether it's yes, sir, or whatever. This is kind of like the warg equivalent of that. And if that's the case, these are soldiers. They are designed and here for a specific reason. And we'll learn more about that in a little bit. And then we get an explanation about what they were talking about. And again, I'm not sure how the narrator would know this. I think if you actually want to consider this like a real explanation in the context of this being a real thing that Bilbo wrote that got passed down and eventually got translated and then fell in, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien's lap. In this context, I think it makes the most sense that at some later time, Gandalf told Bilbo about what was going on and what the wargs had said, and maybe even knew something about the way they operated, because we're filled in here on the details of their relationship with the goblins. Now, that's probably something Gandalf would have been aware of. He would have known that the goblins and the wolves, or at least the wargs, sometimes work together. So in this situation, there's that combination of Gandalf's wisdom plus the things that he's hearing, probably passing on to Bilbo, and then that being reported in this section of the story. But we, as the readers, learn some things too, that they go on raids together, especially to get food or slaves to work for them. That makes them sound even more evil. It's one thing to go on raids in order to get food because, well, wargs need to eat, goblins need to eat. They don't seem like the types to do their own farming. It makes sense that they might go hunting, but raids implies that they're not hunting a bunch of rabbits out in the wild, that they're raiding villages or towns. And this explanation continues to be fleshed out. Sometimes they rode on wolves like men do on horses, talking about the goblins. Now, I know we've all, at least for the most part, seen the movies and have read the books before, but go back to a time where you did not expect that to be a thing. That is terrifying. Can you imagine a horse that's as dangerous as a wolf now riding on the back of that? Horses don't bite at their enemies on the battlefield. They carry the soldiers on their backs. Imagine a horse that's as dangerous as a wolf with a soldier on its back. That's twice as dangerous or more. Now it seemed that a great goblin raid had been planned for that very night. The wargs had come to meet the goblins, and the goblins were late. Okay, so hold on here. Something had been planned? The wolves are as intelligent as the goblins, at least in the sense that they can plan things ahead of time? What was that conversation like? On the night of the, you know, new moon, 2 weeks from now, we will gather in the glade and we will go raid this village. Maybe? But again, it lends itself to this idea that these wolves and these goblins are more like people than they are beasts. Evil, dangerous, terrible people, but people nonetheless. And the narrator even gives us a reason for why the goblins were probably late. Not because they're goblins and they're just really loose with time. No, they were dealing with the situation of the great goblin being killed. And this group of dwarves running through their passages, potentially killing some of them, escaping into the wild, being pursued. That's why they're late. Not because they're incompetent, but because something else more important came up. And then we get an explanation about the people who have moved into the area nearby here trying to make a life for themselves. Many of them were foresters or lumberjacks or probably farmers. They'd been cutting down trees and building places to live in this part of the world, even though it was dangerous. And on top of that, we're told this. If their plan had been carried out, meaning the wargs and the goblins, there would have been none left there the next day. All would have been killed except for the few the goblins kept from the wolves and carried back as prisoners to their caves. So two things here. The wolves would eat everybody if they had their way. And the goblins step in, and sometimes the wolves listen to the goblins because, again, they are making deals, they are negotiating, they are acting like intelligent people, and they bring the prisoners back to their cave as slaves. So in this section of the book, we've learned so much more about the goblins than we knew before. Not only are they terrible creatures that live in a cave and have this little society, and they like to be sneaky and crafty and steal things from other people, but they are organized, and they have, in a way, their own military force that is organized with allies, and they take slaves. They're starting to look more and more like, well, the type of enemy that you would have fought back against during other eras of our own world. And knowing Tolkien, that is 100% intentional. Now, there's another aspect here as well. We're told already in this situation kind of what's going to happen here. If their plan had been carried out, there would have been none left the next day. That's implying that their plan doesn't get carried out. Now, it's already implying that it's not going to happen tonight because the goblins are late. The wolves are now preoccupied with all of these dwarves, a wizard and a hobbit up in a tree. But that means that it probably won't be carried out in the future either. That the circumstances are going to play out in a way where these people are saved because of the coincidence, again, a coincidence of this group being here in this specific place on this specific night. Notice, another coincidence. Had they not stumbled into this dire situation and eventually found their way out of it, then the people of the village would have been killed. So it goes on and talks about how they're in danger again, of course, and the wargs are angry and puzzled to find them there. But then we get this line. They thought they were friends of the woodmen and were come to spy on them. This reminds me, and I don't remember where I heard the quote initially, but it's very much the quality of evil individuals assuming that everyone else thinks like they do. So, for example, they're suspicious about spying because that's what they are familiar with. Evil people always suspect everyone of the same dark deeds that they themselves would employ. So coming across them in this situation, they're assuming that they would be spying because that's what they would do. And this happens a lot in our own world too, because think about how many times people out there level accusations against other people. And then when you really come to find out what's going on, they're guilty of that thing that they were leveling the accusations about. It happens more often than you think, if you pay attention. So the situation starts to play out, and they can't climb up the trees. Gandalf is listening to them and begins to be dreadfully afraid. This is another reminder that Gandalf, although a Maia, is in a flesh and blood body. He needs to survive this situation. And not only that, he's responsible for this group and for their safety as well. And we're told that he could not do very much. Now think about that. He couldn't do very much, but isn't he a wizard? Like, can't wizards cast spells? And this goes back to that idea that magic doesn't work the way that you would assume, like in Dungeons and Dragons or something like that. Magic in this world is a very specific thing. There are limitations. It has to do with exerting your will on the natural world and the world responding to that will. We've talked about this in previous episodes, so go back if you want a refresher on that. He can't just summon like a fireball from nothing. But let's think about like what else he does in the series. Like, does he hold up his staff and shine a light on them? And that's not going to work. And does he even have his staff up in the tree? How's he holding onto the staff and climbing the tree at the same time? It doesn't address that. Was he going to speak in a booming voice? Like, that's going to scare hundreds of wolves away? I don't think that makes any sense. And it's not like he can cast an incantation and just hold them back like he tries to do with the Balrog. Because even that may hold for a time, but they're not going to get out of the trees. The wolves would just stay there. So I can't think of anything that he's done in the way of magic that would really make sense to save them in this situation other than what he chooses to do. He reaches up and he starts grabbing these big pine cones and he starts lighting them on fire because he can manipulate the pine cones being on fire. And it may have something to do with his innate abilities. It may have to do with the ring that he's wearing that we don't know about yet in this story. And on top of that, the first description we get is a bright blue fire. He lights the first pine cone and it's blue. And then we get these other descriptions, blue flames, one in red, another in green, colored sparks and smoke. And he tosses them down on the wolves. And of course, they catch fire and run around and all of that. But what I think is really, really interesting here is not how the pine cones stick in their fur or how they bump into each other and light each other on fire, that sort of thing. It's more about the colors. These colors are very similar to his fireworks. Also, if you take a white light and you break it into a spectrum, you get a rainbow. You get blues and greens and reds and probably other colors. But they're not all mentioned here. So the situation changes, it turns. Bilbo and the dwarves start cheering. We find out that the wolves are afraid of fire at all times. Interesting to note that specifically. And that this was a most horrible and uncanny fire. This is an odd and strange fire. Not only is it fire, but it's also a little bit weird, and the wolves are not cool with that. And then this section ends with this. Very soon, all about the glade, wolves were rolling over and over to put out the sparks on their backs, while those that were burning were running, with howling and setting others alight, till their own friends chased them away, and they fled off down the slopes, crying and yammering and looking for water. All right, I hope you enjoyed that episode, and it's time to go thank our patrons. And by the way, the patron bonus episodes lately, we've been delving into the dwarves and their lineages and their relationships and more about what happens to them after these stories and all of that. So if you are interested in getting that, those are bonus episodes that you can get on the Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. Check everything out. You can get ad-free episodes. You can get what is now a very, very large amount of bonus episodes. So if you're running out of content and you want more stuff, there's a ton of stuff there. Also, thank you to our newest member, Tom's the Bombadil. Love the name. I think you're referring to me, so that's nice. Thank you for signing up. I'm doing this recording very close to the previous recording, so not a lot of time has passed by. So if you've signed up in well, the rest of this week before the episode comes out and I haven't read out your name. Don't worry, I'll read it out next week. Also, have to shout out all of our VIP patrons: AK Music Lover, Apollo, Atle Morton, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Katie, or Cali Cat. Man, I messed it up again. Courtney S, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huan Is My Hero, Gemma D, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Silly Marillion, TJT, Tom's the Bombadil, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much for all of your support. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'll read those out on a future episode. I don't have any new ones this week that I can see because I only see the ones in the US until I find another app. I've been looking, I haven't found a good one yet. But if you are in another place, another country, please think about leaving a review. That's still very helpful. Also, you can rate the show on Spotify or whatever other platform you listen to. And by the way, if you like using Spotify and you join the Patreon, there's a Spotify feed for patron members that's only for you when you sign up on the Patreon. So you can still listen on Spotify. I set that up a little while ago. All sorts of fun stuff. And you can sign up as a free member and just be there for updates and giveaways and things like that. So consider that. Thank you again for all the support. And I'm going to go do a bonus episode where I talk about more dwarves. Hope you have a wonderful week. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.